environment and the climate, how is our interaction with the customer and in terms of the cycle of the business? You know, normally we get 3 to 4 months time horizon before the fashion season starts and we export and then they sell it to the final customer. How is the business dynamics has changed? If you can give us some flavor on that to get a sense whether it has changed or it is still going on how it was in the past.
Okay. So you know, the four macro seasons are spring, summer and autumn and winter sales for customers. But then fast fashion customers are continuously refreshing their products in their stores and have gone to many more drops in their stores, which means that they push us to deliver goods at a shorter and shorter, on a shorter and shorter lead time. So India in general focuses on spring and summer, where there is a skew towards Q3 and Q4 from a production standpoint, because India is strong in cotton. We at Gokaldas have actually, broken this cycle, and, we have a fairly good autumn-winter sales as well, because we focus on products which are synthetic-oriented, which are outerwear-oriented, and we have the technical capability to do so. So we have balanced the season somewhat by onboarding customers who need all these kind of products, as well as, managing the order flow in the right manner and developing the technical capabilities accordingly. The fashion cycle, if fast fashion continues, the fashion cycle will only, will remain the way it is, and probably people will expect a shorter and shorter lead time, which will put more and more pressure on the factories and on the logistics. But then we are well plugged in with our customer set, and we gear ourselves up for the needs of the customer. So we are good to go from that perspective.
Sir, sorry, just one last question. In terms of the CapEx for expansion of the current capacity or a new location, if you can give some guidance for both FY22 and FY23, do we have any plan, please?
For both the years put together, we expect to invest about 120 crores for 22 and 23 put together.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Chintan Chet from Samiksha Capital. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity. Hope I'm audible.
Yes, you're audible. Yes, thank you, Chintan.
Yeah. So it's a couple of questions. One is on the working capital. If I look at your receivable cycle for this quarter, it seems a bit stretched related to what we had in Q4 and September quarter. Anything to read out on that? That is one. Second is in the margins front. If I look at your margins for the quarter, a large part of it is coming from, managing our employee cost relatively better than in the previous year, despite the gross margin contraction we have seen because of the input cost prices. So how long we can sustain our margin based on the employees cost side, because there is a limit to it. So if you can elaborate our strategy in terms of how we are going to scale up our margins going forward, given the pressure we are seeing from the input cost material side.
Sure. So let me answer the second question first and then come back to the first question. You talked about employee cost. The employee cost for the year was about 30.4%. And we estimate that to be at a similar level for FY22 as well. So our employee costs, whatever cost management we have done, we are holding. Whatever incremental employees would be required would be only for expansion. The second point, is how do we improve our margins going forward? There is, as we grow, the incremental revenue will come at an incrementally higher profitability, as not all fixed costs scale up So capacity expansion in the existing factories itself by adding more lines will come at a much higher profitability. Our factory EBITDA itself runs at about 5% higher than our overall EBITDA. So incremental revenue will come at a higher EBITDA, which will automatically give us a margin inflation as we keep expanding the business. Coming to the first question on working capital, I think, and particularly your question was on receivables. There was a huge amount of shipments which got bunched in the last week of March, which resulted in receivables piling up in the last week of March. So that's only bunching of timing issue, from that perspective. Satya, you want to add a little more color on the receivables?
It is purely because of skewed dispatches based on customers' requirement. This is a one-off issue because of the pandemic, and so about 161 crores was the exports receivables. All of them got collected subsequently.
Sure. And lastly,
is 161 crores of discounting amount, which is again discounting. Balance 88 crores and odd subsequently discounted and realized fully now.
Sure. And lastly, on the FD with Canara Bank, the issue fixed deposit stuck with the Canara Bank for working capital. Anything we are trying to move out to the other bank or something like that? If you can, where are we standing on that front right now?
We are working with the other banks, private banks. The work is in progress. We hope to really have a breakthrough in this financial year.
Okay, so we'll be looking at 140 crore getting released, and that will obviously help us to kind of manage our working capital much better.
Absolutely.
Sure. Okay, sir. I'll jump back in queue for any questions. All the very best.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Bharat Choda from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Congrats on a good set of numbers. Sir, I had a
question regarding
the current capacity in terms of lines. What is our current manufacturing capacity in terms of lines? And how much more lines do we expect to add in the next 2 to 3 years, like FY21, 22, and 23? And also specific to Karnataka unit, how many lines will be added and what would be the capex for the same? This is my first question.
Okay, so I think we have about 200 odd lines internally. Again, line itself changes based on the product type. For outerwear, which are heavier garments, we may have to combine a few lines to get one output versus a simple garment. We may even break a line into two lines to produce those. So, but yeah, from a standard line perspective, we have about 200 odd lines across the factory. From a capacity perspective, as I said, we will keep pushing the capacity growth based on demand, which is very strong, and we will keep building out lines, either in a new unit or in existing units wherever possible. And we'll keep driving that through this year and the next. That is why we're also allocating a good amount of capex for expansion. We are, as I said, actively bringing up a unit in Karnataka itself in Tumkur, which is almost come up. And for the lockdown, there has been a bit of a delay in completing the unit and commissioning it. But we will be adding capacities through the year as and when we need in order to meet our requirements. So capacity growth will be in line with the demand trend that we are seeing.
So any number you can share on what capacity will be added in Karnataka unit and the capex for the same?
So as I said, capex, well, I won't say, we will be looking at expansion beyond Karnataka itself. So while this current unit is coming up in Karnataka, we are open-minded about expanding in other areas. For example, the next unit which we are actively looking for and most likely will commence soon once all the paperwork is done will be in Bhopal. So we are looking at expansion beyond south of India as well. looking at locations within India which are cost effective from a labor perspective and from an availability perspective, so that we can even continue to ramp up. So as I said, the capex we are looking for is about 120 crores over the next 2 years, which will be for expansion. A small portion of it will be for modernization, but largely we'll be looking at expansion.
Okay. And sir, I had another question regarding the gross margin. If you look at the yarn prices have been increasing, so what would be your outlook on the gross margin? And also, our employee cost, is it expected to be lower in FY21?
No, so as I had mentioned, the employee cost in FY21 was lower than FY20 as a percentage of revenue. Employee cost in FY22 will be more or less in line with employee cost in as a percentage in FY21. That's as far as the employee cost is concerned. As far as gross margin is concerned, if you're asking about yarn prices, cotton prices, even polyester prices, and all of these have indeed gone up. So we are very large buyers, and we do have some amount of buying clout in the market. So we were not, we did not come under as much pressure last year. And moreover, for many instances, we could pass back the higher costs to the customers. So we negotiated and pushed it back to the customers as well. There was a small amount of it which we had to absorb as well. So these are all dynamic things based on negotiations. But by and large, we have insulated ourselves from a sharp increase. I'm anticipating that the cotton prices may ease a bit, and it's already eased a bit. So we will see how it goes in the forthcoming year.
Okay, so thanks a lot for your answers.
You're welcome.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Akshay Cheda from Perfect Research. Please go ahead.
Yeah, very good morning, sir. So I had a few questions. The first one being, what sustainable advantages do we have against Vietnam and Bangladesh in our business? The second one being, are our contracts pass-through in nature, as in, can we, pass the increasing cost material price to the client? And the third one being, with 24,000 employees already on the roll, what challenges do we see with labor management, unions, etc., when thinking of scaling up that?
Okay, so when it comes to Bangladesh and Vietnam, the competitive dynamics are different. Vietnam works with raw material from China, which is, for them, it's a short lead time away. And they have a good garmenting base that they developed. However, Vietnam is going witnessing a significant cost increase in terms of labor cost, as they have limited labor availability, and they're also up migrating to other industries in the country, and the country is also doing well and growing, so the salary expectations are going up. So Vietnam costs are going up indeed, and some of the customers are looking at other options like Cambodia, but those countries are also increasing in cost. Bangladesh continues to enjoy a significant cost advantage, and more than that, significant availability of labor force and government support to the textiles industry. So Bangladesh will continue to grow. However, I'm also seeing that there is a risk that Bangladesh may lose their FTA status with Europe. I'm saying may because it's not final as yet, in about 4 or 5 years, which means that customers may have to realign themselves as to how much capacity they can get produced out of there. As the large advantage that Bangladesh offers is actually the duty-free access to Europe. That itself gives them about 11% reduced cost to sending goods to Europe. And the labor cost brings up the rest. For customers, India, for U.S. customers, there is no duty differential between Bangladesh and India. So there's only the labor cost, labor arbitrage, which comes into play. India can hold on its own thanks to its fabric ecosystem, thanks to its design capability. And I see that we have ample opportunities to continue to take business away from China, which we have done quite a bit through this period and which we will continue to do. as Chinese costs are going up and China has also fallen somewhat out of favor in many countries, and China's business is huge. So we will continue to gain at their cost. I don't foresee that Bangladesh and Vietnam will take away all our business. In fact, there's enough business for India to take on a global basis. So I hope that I answered you on that. Can you just repeat your other two questions, please?
Sir, the second question was, are our contracts pass-through in nature?
Most of the contracts are like that. So when we book an order, we estimate the price of raw materials and back-to-back place an order on them. So to that extent, our raw material prices become pass-through.
Okay. And shall I repeat the third question, sir?
Yes, please.
Yeah, with 24,000 employees already on the roll, what challenges do we see with the labor management, unions, etc., when thinking of scaling up, sir?
So labor management always has got its own issues, especially when you have large contingent of women labor. We have the capability and we have the experience of handling the labor force within the company. We've been managing them so far and managing them really well. So I don't anticipate this to be an additional challenge or an additional burden from our standpoint. In fact, if you are a fair labor practitioner and do all your statutory compliance and manage your labor force very well, which I believe is one of our core competence, then I think we are in a strong position to manage our labor well. So I don't foresee too much of a challenge on that front.
Okay. That was helpful, sir. Thank you so much, sir.
You're welcome.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Mule Savla from Shah & Savla LLP. Please go ahead.
Hi. Heartiest congratulations, sir, on a good set of numbers in a challenging environment. And also, congratulations for a very nice presentation, very informative presentation that is being put up on the site. Most of my questions have been answered, sir, but I just wanted to have one accounting question related to our finance cost. I see that though our net debt is very low, and as we get some interest subvention also, still our finance cost comes to around 9% of our debt. Is that right reading?
No, our finance cost consists of two components. One is the normal finance cost plus the Ind AS interest accounting. So out of 34 crores of our interest cost, about 6.5 crores is on account of Ind AS. The balance only accounts for a normal interest cost. Again, it is 28 crores consists of about the bank charges about 6 crores, which is on account of various, normal transactions, import, processing fee, etc. If I eliminate that, my actual interest cost is only 22 crores. Against that, you have to knock off 6.3 crores what I have on account of interest income, which is grouped under other income. So effectively, my interest cost is only 15 crores as against my net debt, which is my average interest cost works out to sub 6% at this point of time.
Okay. So that other charges for export and all those things are also very high.
Yeah. It is also because of, number of numerous transactions what we do. Because every month, the number of invoices and things like that, for each invoice, you have to incur the cost as well as the pre-shipment and post-shipment, that insurance cost which is being charged by the bank, all those things accounts for that.
Okay. That's very good. That's very helpful to understand the finance cost. And sir, you have further provided for about 4.72 crore for expected credit risk. May we have some detail of that, and we hope that no further provision is expected against any customer.
See, this is against, as per the policy, it's the expected credit loss provision which is being provided by the company on a conservative basis. We do not foresee any recoverability issue. However, as a conservative policy, any receivables exceeding a certain period, as per the company policy, we provide for it and subsequently we write it back when we realize.
And that's how we really provided today. I mean, for this financial year, we have provided 4.72 crores, of which 3.5 crores has been provided in the first quarter itself. So,
just to clarify, 4.1 crore was provided in this fourth quarter and 3.5 in the first quarter, right?
Yes, sir.
So, it's about 7.5 crores.
And on realization, it will be accounted back.
Okay, okay. Great, great. Thank you so much and wish you all the very best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ashwin Reddy from Samatva Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good morning, and congrats on a very strong set of numbers. Thank you. So I have two questions. Firstly, regarding the design and the value-added services which you talk about in the presentation and the commentary as well. So, I just wanted to understand, is this something which is becoming a norm for the industry and kind of part of the course for all the suppliers, especially the bigger guys like you? Or is it something which we are focusing on to increase the margins over the next 2-3 years? So how should one think about it? I mean, and is this in any way linked to the fast fashion trend also which is going on?
So it's a bit of everything. You know, we have the capability. We have the repertoire of clients who are a mix of fast fashion as well as, the grocer type like your Walmarts and others. So we have and industrials as well. So we have all kinds of customers, and what happens is that with the capability that we have and with the cross customer view that we get, we are in a strong position to advise many of our customers as to how to go about looking at their portfolio and help them, and we do that primarily to increase business stickiness, so that we continue to get a good amount of business traction from them. It has worked well with several customers as they get to know our capabilities, our design capabilities, and obviously with that our production capabilities as well, and also builds stickiness. Whether that results in us getting a little higher pricing, I would not fully endorse it. What it does deliver to us is a better stickiness and growth in revenues.
Understood. This is helpful. And secondly, regarding the credit cost, which we have, regarding the credit loss, and I understand that last 3-4 years have been tricky for the U.S. retail, and even COVID has not helped, obviously. But in terms of structurally protecting ourselves against such cases in the future, is there anything that can be done or has been done already to reduce such instances in terms of
going ahead? So we have taken credit insurance. So I'll answer it in two parts. One is, you know, we've had some credit issues with Indian customers. So as a consequence, we have actually exited the Indian business completely. So we are only, focusing on international business, and we are only focusing on those customers who we believe are financially solvent and strong. We've had certain instances in the past, again, legacy, where we didn't have insurance cover for a few customers. CS was one of them. And we had a problem when they went bankrupt. Most of the customers, or almost all the customers that we have currently, we have an insurance cover from them, which covers any receivables which are at risk, even though, it may not cover the goods which are under production. But the best protection that we have is to constantly monitor the financials of our customers and make sure that we adjust our exposures accordingly. So far, the customers that we deal with now, especially post-COVID, are all customers with reasonably strong financials and have a good amount of cash flows or cash in bank. So we are very careful now to avoid any credit risk instance going forward.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Amit Doshi from Care PMS. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. And really appreciate the detailed presentation and the type of data covered in the presentation.
Thank you.
So you mentioned about the strong order book, and generally, as you always say, you have around 2 quarters of order book in hand. So this time, do you believe that it is more than 2 quarters order book in your hand, or is the type of order which is more like an outerwear or which is more margin remunerative orders? So can you give some hint on that?
So it's the volume of orders as well as the type of orders. We have a good amount of outerwear kind of orders for the quarters ahead, which is Q1 and Q2. And we have a strong order book, which means that our orders for the quarters ahead, in terms of sheer volume, is high. So it's a combination of the right orders, high value orders, as well as volume.
Okay. Thank you. And sir, second, about this cost structure, I was just looking at this March 21 results, and this employee cost, you've already answered about reduction in employee cost. On the other hand, there is job work charges which are on the increase. So is there some sort of a change in the structure that how we are operating is there? And also on the margin front, while we say that we hedge our forex this thing, but this quarter we have around 7 crore substantial forex gain, and probably that's one of the contributors of increase in the margin. So do you want to comment anything on this as well as that cost structure which I spoke about?
So let me address the forex part. For the year, there was a forex loss of 1.5 crores. For the quarter, there is a forex gain of 7 crores. Frankly, the forex gain or loss matters nothing to the P&L and to the PAT levels of the company. What happens is when I book my order, I hedge my, I book it based on my forward rate available, and I've already hedged my receivables for the quarters ahead. So at this point in time, for Q1 and Q2, we have mostly hedged, and for the quarters ahead also, we have somewhat hedged. So I work on a hedged P&L. If the spot rate in a quarter going forward turns, if the rupee, let us say, substantially weakens in the quarter ahead, we will show that there has been a hedge loss of a certain value, because I have hedged that, let us say, at say 73.50, and rupee goes to 74.50. There is a 1 rupee. I book my revenue at 74.50, and then that 1 rupee delta, I show it as a hedge loss. So it really doesn't matter what the spot rates are, and hence what is the hedge loss or hedge gain, as the case may be, because the business is done on a hedged P&L and not on a spot P&L, whereas the Ind AS forces us to cast the P&L as per the spot rates. So revenue is denominated in the corresponding spot rate for the quarter, and then the hedge loss or hedge gain may be taken accordingly. It really doesn't matter to the bottom line.
So job work charges, I just want to clarify, sir. Job work charges is part, some of the activities we engage the people on contract basis inside the factory to complete it. And if you observe that my employee cost for the quarter is very low, and partially part of the work, because of the non-availability of labor on time, we have engaged some people on contract, and that's how you see the job work charges slightly more in Q4.
Okay. So that's a temporary shift owing to lack of labor availability.
Correct.
Okay. Fine. And last one accounting question about this tax. How much tax loss or carry forward loss that we have, and which can be set off? So, just to...
Around 64 crores is what is the carry forward loss, what we have in this financial year.
What figure you said?
64 crores.
64 crores. Okay. Yeah. Thank you so much, and wish you all the very best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Chirag Lodaya from ValueQuest. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. Sir, my first question was on this ROSPTL, which is now discontinued. So what was the benefit earlier, and how much you have accounted in this quarter?
So we, ROSPTL till December 31st, we used to get about 3.5%. I cannot pin it to a certain value because it depends on product type. So there is a range depending on what product we produce and export and we ship, right? But on an average, you could assume at about 3.5% or thereabouts. The ROTEP rates, the countries, the government has announced that starting January 1st, 2021, it will be moving to what is called ROTEP, the refund of duties and taxes, a similar one, which is the refund of embedded taxes. We do not know the rates because it has not been announced as yet. There has been a committee which has worked on it and given it to the government, but we are not privy to it. But the what we did was to take a conservative approach and recognize only RoTEP to the extent of lower end of the range which the industry is expecting. So we have recognized it at about 2% or thereabouts, and we are hoping that when we actually get the RoTEP number, we will make appropriate corrections going forward. But we have been conservative with the RoTEP estimation.
Very clear, sir. My second question was on margin. So you said that current high prices of yarn, etc., will not impact us in near term because we hedge it back to back and we are able to manage our raw material inflation very well. So is that understanding correct? And if you can just help us understand, say, in the next 1 or 2 years, what can be a sustainable margin from a company point of view?
So from a company point of view, my belief is that we should be looking at a couple of percentage points improvement in EBITDA margin, which will come from a combination of doing higher value products, managing operations even more efficiently, and further growth. Sheer growth itself will give some operating leverage. So all of these will help us gain some additional EBITDA margin.
Okay. And there will be no impact on margins in near term because all the orders are already hedged. Is that understanding correct?
That is correct. Though I would say, the current lockdown may have some impact. Current lockdown, which is in Q1, because while I do have orders in hand, chocolate block for my factory, and I'm not producing, when it opens up, I may have to use overtime labor. I may have to get some job work done, etc. So all of this may increase my costs a bit and may have a temporary impact on my margin pertaining to the period of the lockdown. But then that's only a temporary blip. Once the lockdown is done and the backlog is cleared, we should not have a problem going forward. But yes, this lockdown and the time lost or the manufacturing capacity lost may certainly have an impact one time, which is only one time.
Thank you.
And our endeavor will be to recover it as fast as possible and as quickly as possible once the operations are allowed to commence.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Bhavin Cheda from Enam Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, sir. This is Bhavin from Enam Holdings. A good set of overall numbers and a very good presentation. Just a few questions to clarify on the capacity and all that. From the presentation, if I see your number, you have roughly done 19 million pieces, and I think your annual report had a capacity of roughly 30 million pieces. So you can do 50% growth from year. Despite that, we are doing 120 crores capex, which is almost doubling our block. So obviously, I think the buoyancy in US market is driving this. So can you explain us that 120 crores capex will, are you adding how much line, and in terms of million pieces, what would be the capacity post the capex?
So just to clarify, when we talk of pieces, there is a bit of a understanding that we need to have. We are not one of those traditional, say, a T-shirt manufacturer where a piece becomes a standardized piece or a commodity piece, and the difference between two pieces are very little in terms of time taken to manufacture, etc. So when you are manufacturing something as varied as a tank top to a complex jacket for the mountain are well, it's the other end of the spectrum. One garment could take 10 minutes to make, another garment could make 200 minutes to make. So to that extent, pieces are a bit of a misnomer. So piece versus value, both we have to see, keep all these capacities in mind. So as we are producing more and more outerwear, in terms of our capacity itself, we will come down from the 30 million because, you know, these garments are equivalent to 6 or 7 garments of a traditional 20-25 minutes garment variety. So that's the caveat I want you to have. Okay. So over a period of time, we have migrated to a higher value products, you know, year on year. As far as the 120 crores capex is concerned, you know, the capex estimates, based on the capex estimates, about 30 odd crores will go for upgrade capex to upgrade our quality and, you know, refresh our machinery. The balance will be for fresh capex, which will add capacity. The idea is also, you know, this is only an estimate. If my demand is strong, then I will go for a faster growth as well. So we are looking at you know, capacity additions based on how, you know, how fast we can bring up the capacity as well as how fast demand picks up, which I feel will pick up very strongly going forward.
Sure. If I can ask, sir, 120 crores capex can give you what kind of revenue potential when you run that on a full basis? That is one question. And second, I understand, as you said, that this outerwear is leading to the capacity reduction because it obviously utilizes much more time. But historically, especially your presentation, you have done 24, 25 million pieces. So is that number itself gone down because your outerwear share is now 44% versus 30% earlier? So on a comparable basis, you are actually flattish on volumes as compared to past.
Okay, so you know, we used to make 24, 25 million pieces. This year it has been lower primarily because of the pandemic-related loss of capacity. I think going forward, we will, even though we are producing more and more outerwear, which are equivalent to more number of garments, but we can count them as only one garment, we will probably be back to that 25 odd million pieces this year, or maybe even more, depending on how the volumes go up, because we are also adding capacity as we speak. As far as the thumb rule is concerned, which you said, and Satya, correct me if I'm going wrong somewhere, 1.4, 1.5 crore capex investment will give about 6.5-7 crores of revenue. Is that a fair? This is per annum, I'm saying. Satya, am I correct?
Yes, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So you got the math, Bhavin?
Yeah. So you're saying 1 crore investment leads to 6-7 crores of
1.4 to 1.5 crore investment.
So roughly it's
will
four you, times.
Will lead to 6.5 to 7 crores. Yeah.
So roughly it is 4 to 5 times. Okay, that's fine. A second question.
Mr. Cheda?
One more question? Sir, yeah.
Sorry to interrupt, sir, but for any follow-up, maybe request you to
sure.
the queue, please.
Okay. Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Aditya Lalpuria from BNK Securities. Please go ahead.
All my questions have been answered, so I really don't have to ask anything.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Riddhima Chandak from Roa Asset Managers. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity, sir, and congratulations on a very good set of numbers. So my question is on our capex. So this 120 crore capex, will this totally funded from internal accruals, or how much debt we could take?
We will term that to the extent of 50 crores.
Okay. And like you said that in terms of volume growth, so we can, as outerwear revenue contribution will be much higher and it is a higher value product. So can we assume that our revenue would be around 1500 odd crores? As you said, we can do 25 odd million pieces in FY22.
You're talking for FY22, you're saying?
Yeah.
So, you know, we're obviously trying to do well in FY22, and hopefully we'll do very well. You know, I really missed the revenue number you said, but I thought you said 1500. Am I correct?
Yeah.
We'll try to do better than that, but we'll see.
Okay. And in terms of our EBITDA margin, sir, EBITDA margin, if you compare to our last 7-8 quarters, it is highest. if we see. So will these EBITDA margins sustain in FY22 and going forward, that is 9%, 9.5%?
That's what I mentioned, that over a period of time, we will see EBITDA margin go up primarily because we are pivoting towards higher value products. Second, operating leverage, that is incremental revenue, will come at an incremental revenue as all the costs will not scale up in line. All of these will certainly help us get a better EBITDA margin going forward.
Okay. So means 1%, 2% incremental we can
assume. We should be seeing those kind of improvements going forward.
Okay. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Resham Jain from DSP Investment Managers. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Good morning. And just a couple of questions. So first is, you just mentioned 1,500 crores is the optimal kind of revenue from the current capacity plus the new one which is coming up in Karnataka. Is that right?
Can you repeat the question?
No, what I was saying is that the 1,500 crore revenue which you mentioned is the optimal revenue which you can do.
No, I did not mention any 1,500 crore. So she asked if you will do it, but we are looking at a good revenue growth based on demand.
Can you tell us what is the optimal revenue you can... Sorry,
go ahead.
Go ahead, sir.
No. So we will push the revenue as much as possible. In this year, we are very confident of a strong revenue growth. The number which we just took seems to be at the lower end of the spectrum is all I'm saying. We may do better. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. No. So what I was trying to understand is the optimal revenue which can do, including the new Karnataka capacity which is coming up. What is that you can do, assuming seasonality into the business?
Okay. So you're saying what is the revenue that I can do based on the current capacity? Is that the question that you've asked?
Yes, including the new capacity coming up in Karnataka.
So with that, we will do in excess of that 1,500 odd crore revenue. So, the capacity also is flexible. As we are adding more capacity in the system, and if I freeze the capacity at current levels, then that's the number which you are looking at. But I will also be adding capacity as we speak.
Okay, got it, sir. So my second question is on the number of factories which you have, and in the past we discussed that there can be few widgets within the factories which you operate. Is that process still on, or do you think that whatever has to happen in terms of optimization has already happened?
No, so there is some more of that happened. See, the capacity of a factory is dependent on two things. One, the space available in the factory to add more lines, and two, labor availability in the captive area around the factory, right? So let's say I have more space and I can put lines, but if I don't have labor, there is no point in going and putting the line. So what we're doing is, we are building up more capacities in the existing factories as well, as that's a lower cost to build up to increase capacity. And we're also, when we're running short of labor in the captive area around the factory, we are also now looking at options to put up dormitories and bringing in facilities through a third party, of course, so that bringing in more labor force in that area to just break this labor availability conundrum. And south of India sometimes can become labor challenged in certain pockets, and that's how we are working through. So all of this is helping us unlock some more capacity in our existing factories too. How much would that be? It would be about, in our existing factories, we could unlock to the extent of about 10-odd% in all our existing factories put together.
Okay.
Then rest will all be our new capacities. We'll let you go. Keep going.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pratik Kothari from Unique PMS. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, and thank you for the opportunity, sir. So my question to the continuation of earlier comment you made regarding the issue which we have with the Canara Bank FD. Basically, just as a shareholder, I was not aware about the same. So can you just highlight what the whole issue is about?
This is a legacy issue. In fact, when we offered the security, some of the properties in the earlier, prior to 2015, we offered some of the properties as a collateral security for a term loan. When it got, we have sold off those properties, but then replaced with as a cash collateral, and the cash collateral continued. Today, we have around 147 crores is a fixed deposit we have as a cash collateral, which continued as a collateral for the working capital also. So our request with the Canara Bank is to reduce the limit as and set up this fixed deposit is a request which we have been placing with the Canara Bank for quite some time. So there were challenges, and because it is a dilution of security, they are not in a position to take a call easily. So we are working with other banks to replace the limits, whatever is sanctioned by Canara Bank, with the private bank. The work is in progress. We hope to really have a breakthrough in this financial year.
So anyway, if, you know, for more color, I think you can have an offline conversation on this. As I'm sure, you know, you'll have more questions on this explanation as well. So you can probably connect with Satyamurthy offline to know more.
Sure. Thank you, sir, and all the best.
You're welcome.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Anish Jobalia from Banyan Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity. So my question is around the road tap rate, which you have currently booked at around 2%, and the range that like we are looking at is in the 2-4% range. So our total incentives on exports in the past have been 5-6%. So we are looking at a shortfall of say 2-3% going forward. So how would you be able to recoup the shortfall from the customers in FY22? If not, what would be your strategy, you know, to mitigate this margin headwinds?
When I say 5-odd%, it also includes a duty drawback, which also comes to about 1.5%. That has not been abolished, so that is very much within the scope. So we will get that as well. So effectively, we are talking of 1.5-odd% delta in terms of margin reduction if that happens. Correct? Now we will naturally price that into our contracts going forward, and once the rates are very clear to us and gets announced, then we will start factoring that into the pricing as it becomes transparent to everyone. For the moment, the rates not being announced is a challenge, as there is no official word on what it is going to be. So we are waiting for appropriate announcements. But then we will start factoring into the extent possible. Rest of it, anyway, we will, you know, whatever our own efficiency improvement will also compensate for it. So as to a large extent, we will push it back on the pricing.
Okay, so given this, sir, in the next year, we are expecting a very strong growth. Assuming a normal scenario as it is today, based on your projections and your visibility, so with such a strong growth, and you have been speaking about the operating leverage piece out. So do you think operating leverage can play out in the next year itself because of such a strong growth and that we are expecting, or what is the time frame for this margin expansion that you have been thinking of 2%?
Time frame for margin expansion is 2 years for me, conservatively, and you know, we will obviously try our best to bring it home as fast as we can, and all of us are on. Now, what works against all this margin, and I'm kind of also factoring in, RockTap, the new RockTap in this, right? So it's after all of that, but then how fast, how soon we can, all depends on, how much I'm able to price it in and how fast I'm able to price it in to, what is the disruptions due to lockdowns, which at the moment we are currently facing. So there will be minor hiccups on the way. But I'm anticipating that, by
the fourth quarter of the current year, that is FY22, we should be seeing a good chunk of it coming in.
Okay, and just one follow-up, small follow-up. So the margin expansion that we are clearly looking at, as per your calculation, is around 2%, right? I mean, that's the
over 2 years.
Right, sir?
Over 2 years, yes.
Over 2 years. Okay, sir. Thank you so much, sir, for the opportunity for interaction.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Moni Singhal, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Good afternoon, and congratulations on a good set of results. Both all of you and the company are keeping good. Just wanted to quickly understand from you, from a 3-4 year perspective, are we looking at any geographical diversification from a market kind of point of view, given we are reconcentrating in the US and the economy can go down there at some point in time in terms of the slowdown, etc.? Secondly, which is
Mr. Singhal, sorry to interrupt. Your voice is breaking up a lot.
Am I audible?
Yes, sir.
So, and this ECL that we have provided for, this is a one-time, and had it not been there, so if I have to compare apples to apples next year, this 4.5 crore should get added into the P&L, right?
Right. So answering the first question first, you talked about, U.S. market and concentration risk. Are we looking at market expansion? In fact, we have pivoted more and more towards the U.S. In response to a better performing market there. And we have pivoted out of Europe. So our exposure to Europe was much higher, and we brought it down over a period of time. And we continue to do that as we speak, because the U.S. market seems to be doing much better. U.S. is a more homogenous market. So in that sense, it's a larger market, whereas Europe, what sells in Germany is different from what sells in Italy and so on and so forth. So there are too many small-scale orders. And most importantly, we end up competing with Bangladesh when we go into Europe, which goes, Bangladesh goes duty-free. So we have been doing more and more American business. Now, do I see a concentration risk? No, because we have suitably diversified ourselves across customers and across product class as well. So whether it is fashion, industrials, and all of those garments. So to that extent, there's a reasonable diversification. As far as the market concentration is concerned, we are closely watching. We've also upped our Asia exposure. So we will balance all of these between the three large geographies, that is Asia, Europe, and U.S. For the moment, we seem comfortable with our exposure levels to U.S. If there are any headwinds that we see, then we may realign, because a lot of our customers are global and we can always realign. That's as far as this one. And then you had one more question, which was pertaining to the ECL. Yes, the ECL, ECL will be an additional benefit going forward, because I don't foresee us providing going forward.
Sure. And one last question, sorry. The return on incremental capital should be in excess of 25% to 30%?
I'm sorry, return on what? Incremental?
Incremental capital employed. So whatever we invest going forward, okay. So return on that.
I will have to come back to it. How the ROCE or incremental, you're saying incremental return on the incremental ROCE, yeah, incremental capital, correct? Is that what you're saying?
Correct. Yes.
See, it works. It doesn't work that cleanly. In the long run, yes. In the short term, no. And I'll tell you why. Because whenever you put up a new capacity, the new capacity takes time to ramp up. And when it is ramping up for the first year, there will be a ramp-up cost, etc. The skills have to be aligned. We may not be able to go in for the highest quality product in those factories. So typically, a new factory will try to pull it down a bit. Having said that, we are also looking at low-cost locations, where the cost structures are significantly lower, the labor cost is much lower, etc., and labor incentives also kick in. So there will be an offsetting component based on that as well. So it has to be seen in a net light. We can connect offline to discuss this.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Chirag from Nidara Capital. Please go ahead.
So all my questions have been answered. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Dheeraj from Finarta Research. Please go ahead.
Yeah. So we have been seeing a substantial decrease in the employee cost in last year. So this is due to this pandemic or there has been some automations done?
So both. One is of course pandemic, so we managed to reduce our costs, which are all structurally done. And second, we've also gone for higher value product and higher margin product, so that also helps in bringing down labor cost as a proportion to the revenue.
Okay. And second question, sir, are we having any benefits from the recent policies announced by government like PLI scheme, textile parks and all?
So PLI scheme, the details, the PLI scheme really favors man-made garments. The scheme as the government shared in the first instance was not the best from an industry standpoint. The industry has gone back and represented to the government to alter it. We are awaiting more details before we can take full advantage of it.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. We take the last question, a follow-up from the line of Bhavin Cheda from Inam Holdings. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. So can you update, as you made the comment, India was taking away market share from China, mainly in the US market. Can you elaborate more on the overall market size, if any, of your product segments and how the market share has moved in last 2-3 years, some kind of a structural change and some data points where it will be useful so that we can track it on a regular basis?
So I can probably have a separate conversation with you on some of these, as it requires a lot of elaboration in terms of details, product wise, trends, etc. And it'll be difficult to just explain it away on the phone.
Sure.
But the key is that China is when you look at exports to the States, China has been showing a year-on-year decline. I think even last year they had a 4% odd decline. And it's their loss has largely been taken by Vietnam and a few other places. And India has not gained as much, but only a little. But people like us, operators like us, we have been, gaining considerably and gaining share in those markets. So it also depends not just on how the country as a whole does, but an operator individually may be able to take a good amount of share based on their own capabilities. So there's a lot of those nuances in here.
Sure. Thanks, sir. That's helpful, and we'll chat on this separately. Sure.
Yes, please.
Thank you. I would now like to hand the conference over to the management for closing comments.
Thank you. So I think, I feel confident based on how the market is shaping up. Our end markets, I'm encouraged to see that most of the markets seem to be turning around the corner post-COVID. All of those countries have had several waves of COVID, and they seem to be getting a firm grip. If for whatever reason the markets do get impacted, then there may be some headwinds, though I don't anticipate that at all. On the contrary, I anticipate a strong tailwind from a business standpoint as these countries are opening up, and particularly since our exposure to US is high, and as US is opening up, more and more demand will come our way. So our locus of attention or focus will be largely on how do we ramp up our production to cater to the demand. And that's where we are single-mindedly focusing on. We do have present challenge or a temporary challenge at the moment in the form of a lockdown in Karnataka, which has kept all our factories shut, which is a source of agony for us as we are sitting on a huge order book. We are hoping that we will be able to get our factories operational at the earliest. The lockdown continues till end of this current week. We are hoping to get us back on rails as soon as possible, so that we can meet the requirements. To the extent that we have lost time in terms of productive capacity, there will be some minor hiccups in terms of financials. In terms of our inability to ship goods accordingly. So it might get reflected in our Q1 financials, but that's completely temporary, because as soon as we are operational, we will try to scramble up, make up for lost time, and then continue growing as we are sitting on huge amount of orders. I don't anticipate much from penalties and those kind of perspectives, because we are aligning our customers well from that perspective. So we are handling the lockdown reasonably well. It's just the lost time we need to account for and manage as soon as the lockdowns are lifted. But I'm very hopeful and very confident of demand staying strong through the year and the years ahead. Thank you very much for listening into the conversation.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of